Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
It is a Monday here on Dog Nation Daily. That means Chip Towers. We're going to have Chip on the program a little later on. And among many other subjects, one of the things that we'll get into with Chip is the budding rivalry that would seem to be growing between Georgia and Alabama. This is true because these two teams played in the College Football Playoff National Championship game back in January. It's also true because, you know, since Nick Saban has been at Alabama, I don't think there's any program that has succeeded in copying the Alabama model more so than Kirby Smart has at Georgia. And we've certainly spent a lot of time talking about that here on Dog Nation Daily and sort of doing that side-by-side comparison between the two. Georgia has just done a good job of emulating the success that Alabama has been able to have. And it's also worth pointing out in moments like this of let's not do too much too soon here and give too much praise too quickly, because obviously copying the ultimate success that Alabama's had, even winning a national championship, is certainly easier said than done. Putting together multiple national championships is by no means a given. It's by no means a guarantee. But in terms of the foundation that's been built, a lot of folks have tried to match what Saban's done in Alabama. No one's come closer to matching that than what Kirby Smart's been able to do at Georgia. We've noticed that here on Dog Nation Daily. It's been noticed by other people as well, including former Alabama offensive coordinator, current FAU head coach, very outspoken observer of college football. Of course, I'm talking about Lane Kiffin. Kiffin was on the radio station 104.5 ESPN Radio in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He was talking to one of the show hosts you probably heard of is T-Bob Hebert. T-Bob was a very good player at LSU. And the subject of, you know, the attempt to overtake Nick Saban in the SEC and how it's being done, and Kirby Smart in particular. Is Smart nipping at Nick Saban's heels, and is Smart building something, an emerging power at Georgia that could eventually overtake the Alabama dynasty? Well, Lane Kiffin had some interesting things to say about that. Here is the former Bama OC, now FAU coach, Kiffin.
You've got someone that's been with you for 10 years, knows every single thing you do, every single thing, why your program's successful, not just, you know, for me, I went to Alabama and got to learn for 3 years. It was already rolling. You know, Kirby got to be there from day one to see how Coach built it. And so, you know, that's hard. You know, you're taking the guy that's been there for 10 years with you, and now he goes in the conference, and you got to compete against him. But it ain't the first time he's been doing that a lot. You know, he joked, I won't tell you which coach joked, but he joked about the SEC meetings are basically a Saban staff meeting.
So a couple things here. First of all, I think ultimately the Kirby Smart success at Georgia is ultimately a problem for Lane Kiffin, because I think Kiffin wants the credit for what Alabama was able to do in 2014, 2015, 2016. Oh, it was your innovative offense that made all of that possible. Now, I've certainly given a lot of credit to Lane Kiffin for some of that kind of stuff. I don't think that Alabama would have won 3 straight SEC championships without him, but ultimately the full credit for that sort of 3 years of success, you know, it's sort of hard to justify all of that when you see Kirby Smart basically take that Alabama model as a movable feast and put it in Athens, Georgia, and sort of build the same kind of program. So ultimately, I think that Lane Kiffin, even if he'd never admit this publicly, I think he probably views Kirby Smart as a little bit of a problem in Lane's ultimate goal, which is to create as much attention around himself as he can possibly get. You know, he doesn't look like the expert on Saban when you see Kirby Smart utilizing the Saban style to such great effect here in Athens, Georgia. So that's the first thing. The second thing about what you just hear Lane Kiffin say there, you know, it is very reductive, and that's probably a bigger word than I need to be using, but I think I know how to use that word correctly. It's very reductive to say, oh, yeah, you know, Saban at Smart at Georgia doing the Saban thing, that's not really any different than, you know, what other SEC schools have tried to do by hiring former Saban assistants. The idea that the SEC spring meetings or SEC media days are like an old-time Alabama staff meeting with all the former Alabama staffers who are, you know, working at various places around the SEC. The reason why that's too simplistic is, while yes, Georgia copies the page from Florida, who hired former staffer Jim McElwain, former staffer Will Muschamp, the fact of the matter is those guys did not have great success at Florida. You know, Muschamp had the good recruiting classes. Almost all of that took place on defense. He was never able to find his offense. Jim McElwain didn't really have any recruiting success whatsoever at Florida. It's almost easy to forget that McElwain was a one-time Saban assistant, given how badly he failed when he was at Florida. Say the same thing about Will Muschamp now at South Carolina. You know, you don't have the same capabilities for success at a place like South Carolina that you have at a place like Georgia. So there are a lot of former Saban assistants working at various places around the SEC, but none of them really look like Georgia. None of them have won the SEC for the most part. None of them have built number one recruiting classes for the most part. None of them have emulated it quite as well as Kirby Smart, even in two seasons in Athens, has already been able to emulate that at the University of Georgia. So you may say, well, yeah, you know, Saban sort of had to fend off former employees, former assistants before, beat Jimbo Fisher, his former offensive coordinator, who was then the head coach of Florida State, to start the 2017 season. He's done a lot of that over the course of time. But I think we would all agree that what Smart is doing in Georgia just looks a lot different than what a lot of those other programs have done with the former Saban assistants, which actually brings me something else that Lane Kiffin said in this interview with the Baton Rouge radio station. He was talking about the great success that Saban has enjoyed and Lane Kiffin's belief that he might hang around and do all this for maybe another 10 years because of just how much energy that Saban has. But listen to Lane Kiffin here. In his argument for Nick Saban and why Saban may stay Alabama coach for a lot longer, I'm not quite sure that Kiffin makes the point that he thinks he's making. He seems to want to support Nick Saban's future here, but the actual words that Kiffin's about to speak almost sounds like more of an argument for Kirby Smart's future at Georgia. I found this to be very interesting from Lane Kiffin, an interview last week on a Baton Rouge sports radio station. Listen to Lane Kiffin here.
You know, he works harder than everyone else in the building, regardless whether it's a 25-year-old or not. And so I think him stopping would only be because by choice that he wanted to, not for any other reason, because he ain't going to slow down. He's going to continue to be the best recruiter in the country, and that's the number one reason that he went. He has the best players every time. Every time they play, every Saturday they play, they have better players on the other sideline, and it's usually not even close. I mean, they had better players by far, even in the national championship. That has everything to do with one thing, that he's the best recruiter and outworks everybody.
I think that's really fascinating from Lane Kiffin there. The description of Kirby Smart is certainly something that has been true. Nick Saban has had the best players in every game he's played for, gosh, every year, going back probably since 2008. You know, that first year when that real big recruiting class, Alabama, kind of got, you know, added into the mix there in Tuscaloosa. Ever since then, in every game that Alabama's played, they've virtually always had better players. When Georgia and Alabama played in January for the national championship, Alabama probably still had the overall, from a composite rating standpoint, the overall better roster. But where I think I disagree with Lane Kiffin, where I believe that many of you are going to disagree with Lane Kiffin, is the idea that that has been true, and therefore it is going to continue to be true. Kiffin acts like that Nick Saban is still the best recruit in the country. Do you actually believe that when you look at the snapshot of the 2018 class? The fact that Kirby Smart over and over again beat out Alabama for players that Alabama would have liked to have had? Do you believe that's going to be true going forward in 2019? We just had the opening qualifier this past weekend in Buford, Georgia. We're going to talk a lot about that on the show throughout the rest of the week. Georgia commits really showing out there. Guys that might be parts of the 2019 class for Georgia also impressing and doing their part to make national names for themselves. When you look at the momentum for the 2019 class with current commits and would-be commits, I think most people would say that Georgia also sets up to be better than Alabama again in 2019 as well. So this notion that Saban, who has the tireless energy, he's used that to be the number one recruiter in college football, he's going to keep doing that in the future, I'm not quite so sure the evidence suggests that anymore. And I've said this on SEC Country Live now, going back the last few days. Whether it be the Chris Lowe piece at ESPN or all these other pieces in media over the last few days that have kind of talked about what Saban's future at Alabama might be, that he's got many more years to come. If he doesn't have the best players in the sport anymore, I don't quite know that same energy is going to be there from Saban. I don't quite know that the stomach's going to be there for him to tolerate that very intense Alabama fan base if he doesn't have better players in the competition he's going up against. And in the future, he's not going to have better players than Georgia. In 2018, when they meet in the SEC Championship, from an overall composite talent standpoint, if that rematch does occur, I think Georgia's going to look a little bit different than it did in 2017, even more talented than it was. And don't get me wrong on this. Nothing is given here. You know, it's not Georgia's birthright or its inheritance to win SEC championships, to be where Alabama has been and win a national championship. That's not a guarantee. But the program with the better players is going to be the program in a better position to succeed. And in the future, the program with the better players,
I don't think it's going to be Nick Saban anymore. I think what Kirby Smart is building at Georgia is a force to be reckoned with. And Lane Kiffin, when he has these kind of interviews in the future, I think he's going to be forced to give credit where it's due in the direction of Kirby Smart there at UGA.
My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. I am glad you're with us on the program today. Whether you access us on video, audio, kind of whatever in between, a little bit of a technical issue with our video stuff here today. I guess that's mostly being a Facebook situation. So if you normally watch Dog Nation Daily on Facebook, we appreciate you kind of catching up with us in a slightly different format today, either on YouTube or in the audio version of the show. And we'll try to be back up and running. Hopefully Facebook will have some stuff figured out. We'll be back again 10 a.m. tomorrow morning on the Dog Nation Facebook page. Of course, we're on YouTube every day at 10 a.m. as well. A lot of you like watching the video version of the show on YouTube. I'm always really interested in how many of you access the program. Of course, a lot of you listen to us on the radio as well at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we're glad to be with our friends in the Classic City on the radio on 960 The Ref, and glad to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, if that is indeed the way that you catch up with the program. And then podcast form, pretty much wherever podcasts are found, Apple Podcasts, Android devices, it's all there for you for Dog Nation Daily. We even post the show at the worldfamousdognation.com. We're just really glad you have found Dog Nation Daily here today. As I mentioned to start our show, it is a Monday. That means Chip Towers here on the program. A lot to get into with Chip. I'm going to spend a couple of minutes sort of setting some of that up as far as the big news coming off the weekend for Georgia before Chip comes on. Then we'll do some Fromm and Field stuff. So we'll have a good conversation with Chip Towers here coming up in just a moment. But the subject I want to get to off the top with Chip Towers, I also need to talk about for a minute with you as well. That is Devod Wilson, the big-time incoming freshman defensive back, one of those guys that gets to go through spring practice for Georgia. And listen, maybe that gives him a leg up over a guy like Tyson Campbell, or would have given him a leg up over a guy like Tyson Campbell, who's going to be a summer enrollee at Georgia. The reason why you have to use the past tense for that kind of conversation, as Kirby Smart told us on Saturday, Devod Wilson was injured during a UGA practice. Here was Kirby Smart breaking that news.
Devod Wilson got injured today. I don't know the status of that, but that's disheartening because he had had three really good practices, and I was really fired up about him, and we'll have to wait and see what the injury is.
Yeah, so that's super disappointing to hear Kirby use a word like disheartening, and Kirby's slow to praise these freshmen, but saying he had three really good practices, all of a sudden, as a Georgia fan, you're kind of left to wonder what might have been with Wilson in the fold potentially playing as a freshman. We'll obviously have to wait on that. Kirby went into a little bit more detail about exactly what it was about Wilson that he had liked as a player during his freshman season.
The biggest thing is he's 190, 95 pounds. He's that Mo Smith, that Aaron Davis, that star-type body. And he was picking things up well. Again, I don't want to jump to conclusions. I don't know. I just know he took he was down out there. So we'll see if he's able to come back or not. But we're going to have to find some guys that can mature and play. And we got to find a star and nickel. We got to find a couple safeties and find at least a couple corners.
So that's a super disappointing news for Georgia fans. Wilson's one of those freshmen that you would like to have seen be able to get some experience during the spring. That's not going to happen. Seth Emerson tried to go in a little bit more detail with Kirby about the nature of the injury, but as you might imagine, Kirby was pretty tight-lipped on that.
Were you able to say what kind of injury?
No, it's lower extremity.
So Kirby didn't want to be more specific than a lower extremity, but Wilson at one point actually tweeted out the nature of the injury. I want to show you this text from DogNation.com. Seth Emerson, the writer here, he had seen a tweet from Devod Wilson. I never saw this, but Seth saw the tweet that said, "Tore my ACL, comeback's going to be epic, God's plan." That was Isaiah Wilson's tweet, but as Seth Emerson reports at DogNation.com, Devod Wilson eventually deleted that tweet. So Wilson tweets it was an ACL injury, then deletes the tweet. Kirby Smart didn't want to be more specific about the nature of the injury. One thing is for sure, though, a very promising freshman season would seem to have now been upended because of injury, and for a Georgia defensive backcourt that needs to be overhauled a bit going into 2018, a man down there in that regard. And listen, that's one of the reasons why you go after as many recruits as you can get in a given recruiting cycle, because you need as much talent as you can have on the roster any one time. Something else we'll talk to Chip Towers about in just a moment here is, and as I'm recording this on a Monday morning, Chip's already had some more reporting on this. Kevin Purvis, the UGA staffer, kind of an equipment manager type guy who was involved in a very strange situation over the weekend, fired from his job at Georgia, arrested on felony charges of
surveillance. I guess there was some sort of camera in some sort of like shower area, as Chip is reporting at DogNation.com on Monday morning. Also, some drugs found in his residence after a search there. And listen, you know, this to me seems like something that's going to be isolated just to one guy who seems to be very troubled here. It's obviously going to be a little bit of a bad PR situation for Georgia, but I don't think you can question anything that Georgia's done in terms of how it's handled this. It found out about it, fired him quickly, called the police. Police are going to do what they do. So there'll be some sort of, you know, tangential bad PR that comes Georgia's way through all of this, but it seems like it's going to be a relatively small story in terms of this was a weird guy doing some weird things, at least allegedly, and the law enforcement's now involved on that. We'll get more on Chip Towers about this story in a moment. Also, more from him in terms of what's been going on at UGA practice. It is a busy week here with practice rolling on. We're glad you're with us and hope you enjoy Chip Towers right now here on Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And we'll say good morning to Chip Towers. Chip coming on a little later than normal. He's been nice enough to be flexible with us. And, Chip, we appreciate your time as always. And good to have you with us on Dog Nation Daily. And, as I said, thanks for sort of altering your normal time just a little bit here today.
Hey, it's anything for you, Brandon. You know that.
Well, I appreciate that. Let me start with some bad news. We'll eventually work our way to some weird news with Kevin Purvis, and then maybe try to finish with some good news before it's all said and done. But for a lot of Georgia fans, the Devon Wilson news of what he on Twitter called an ACL injury, Kirby Smart didn't want to be that specific, really kind of comes at a bad time here. Never a good time for an injury, but this is a guy that Kirby Smart had also praised for having some really good practices in his first few practices there in a Georgia uniform. No way to slice this up. Personally disappointing for Wilson, for the Georgia fan looking for an upgrade to that Georgia secondary. To be a man down there now is not what you want to hear. This is just the nature of the beast with spring football, though, right?
Yeah, it is. You know, that's what happens when you practice football, period. Injuries are such a big part of the game. Unfortunately, it happened to Devon. And the thing is, like you pointed out, I mean, you know, Kirby, he's not one to pour out a bunch of praise, period, especially when it comes to true freshmen first showing up in camp. But, I mean, you could tell right away when the conversation turned. Kirby told us, obviously, we weren't out there on the field to see that the young man had gotten injured. He volunteered the information, you could tell right away. From the tone of his voice and his countenance, that it was really disappointing. He said he had done a really, really good job. And, I mean, the fact of the matter is, depending on how you slice it up, you know, Georgia basically has five positions open back there. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that DeAndre Baker is still going to be your starting cornerback, and I would imagine J.R. Reed will continue to start at one of the safeties, if not at the star position. But generally, it's a really big competition back there in the back end of Georgia's defense, as it is almost everywhere in Georgia's defense. And they certainly were liking what they saw from Devon Wilson early on. And you know, it's a knee injury. The good news is, you know, it happened in March. You know, based on the general timeline we know about those things, that probably takes him out of the mix for 2018. But plenty of time for him to recover and be able to contribute, you know, in 2019 for sure.
And I think it's also one of those situations where for an incoming freshman like Tyson Campbell, who's going to be here in the summer, he was already going to have a big spotlight on his arrival. And now, I hate to say it this way, but maybe a little bit more pressure on him to come in and play well right away, given the fact that the heralded signing class at that position anyway, defensive back, is a subtracting a man here because of injury. A little more pressure on Campbell now, I would assume.
Yeah, I think all of those guys. I mean, I think if you've got DB next to your name right now at the University of Georgia, you know, you're in play. I mean, you're essentially, if I'm not mistaken, I think they got 12 players with that distinction of defensive back. And listen, they're talking about a lot of other individuals trying to give them some help back there at this very important star position. You know, guys like Jaden Hunter, who's a linebacker, an inside linebacker by trade, guys like Walter Grant, who's an outside linebacker by trade, probably went under the radar for a lot of people. But, you know, Lorenzo Carter actually took a lot of snaps at the star position for Georgia last year, which is largely a coverage position that is also involved with some perimeter contain as well. And so you got to have a pretty special individual. You're looking for somebody. Georgia has plenty of bodies, but they don't have the ideal body for that star position. Generally, you want somebody that's, you know, 190, 200 pounds who can get in there and stick his nose in pretty good in run contain as well as pass coverage. And Georgia just doesn't have a whole lot of guys that fit that bill. And Devon Wilson definitely did fill that bill in that regard. So that's one less candidate that you have. So Georgia's trying all kinds of different pieces. And that's what you see in the spring. You know, they're going to be trying, a dozen people at every position, really, as it is anyway.
You've had some good reporting on a very weird story involving Kevin Purvis, who was a football staffer. I guess he's like an equipment manager type guy. There are a lot of pictures of him standing next to Kirby Smart because of the role that he filled at Georgia. Even as we record this on a Monday morning, you've had some relatively late-breaking reporting. I haven't had a chance to read the story yet, but it sounds like he's got some more charges coming his way after the police kind of search his residence there. What do you make of this? Is there anything you can kind of do to kind of – I mean, I think most of us are like scratching our head trying to figure out exactly what happened here. This guy had alleged to have had a camera and a shower at the facility somewhere. What is going on, Chip? I don't understand anything about this.
Well, all the report is this morning is just following up with it. You know, it's just now for the first time the police report was available. So the police report became public this morning, and we got that from the University of Georgia Police, and it didn't go into a lot of great detail, but what we were able to ascertain from that report was A, that there were two cameras involved. One is all we knew of before that. It validated that they were in the men's shower area of the Georgia locker room, and it validated that there were no student athletes victimized in this case. And so we're not, identifying who the victim was, but it was not a student athlete. And, so that's important to corroborate what Georgia was saying all along. And, and then there were more details involved of exactly what the drug charges were. What happened was they were called to somebody found a camera on February 26th. On February 27th, police come. They meet with HR personnel. Conduct an investigation fairly quickly in that investigation. This guy was identified as the suspect, Kevin Purvis. He's a guy who's been an equipment manager. His title is Associate Equipment Manager, so number two in charge of Georgia's equipment. And for whatever reason, he was trying to capture images of an individual or individuals in there. We don't know who or why. That's what we don't know at this point. And we probably won't know because the entire investigative file is not going to be available until the case has actually been adjudicated. And that's probably going to be quite some time. But Kevin Purvis was dismissed in the middle of the investigation, a couple of weeks into it. And then it resulted in five charges, which warrants were executed on those charges this past Friday. He was jailed and released on Saturday. Georgia has moved on. They want to move on. And, I've had conversations with Greg McGarrity and Kirby Smart about this. And then they've issued a statement. And certainly they're hoping to move on and put this behind them as quickly as possible.
And I realize that you're limited on this based on what you've been able to report. But there's no reason to believe right now this extends beyond anything more than just one guy who may have been, at least if the allegations are true, kind of a troubled guy. There's no reason to believe this sort of extends beyond the actions of any one guy, though, correct?
No, yeah, there's no indication to that. And you got to understand that. Almost a month was put in this by University of Georgia Police. I don't know how many man hours that encountered, but, from the date that they got this report until that arrest was made this past Friday, there was investigation that ensued all in between there. And so you figure that, electronic devices were inspected and all that stuff over a period of time, and I would imagine they've gotten deep. And my understanding on it is this is an isolated one-time incident, and Georgia is hoping to move on from it as quickly as possible. And I think they will. I think in a couple of days there won't be much talk about this anymore, and we'll be focusing. Our focus will be where it should be. It's, you know, who's going to start at defensive line and inside and outside linebacker, right?
Yeah, exactly right. In fact, let me focus in on some of that stuff right now because I'm probably a lot more equipped to talk about that anyway. When it comes to the quarterback situation, you've had some great reporting on Jake Fromm over the last few days, and one of the things that you kind of have a chance to do is talk to David Morris, who was the coach who was kind of leading Fromm through that video that we saw, you know, back during spring break when he's working on those drills and doing that kind of stuff. And, you know, Chip, my belief is, and you've done a good job of writing this, but when you look at the sort of devotion that Fromm shows to working and practicing, that this is a tough guy to beat out this spring. You know, Fields may be a phenomenal player, but Fromm is just tough to beat out because of how seriously he seems to go about this kind of stuff, including his own personal work with a quarterback coach like Morris. Is that kind of your opinion on this too?
Yeah, I think I saw a tweet from Greg McElroy the other day at the SEC Network, former Alabama quarterback, who said he wouldn't think that that Jake Fromm is too concerned. And yeah, I definitely, you know, talking to his father, Emerson Fromm, the previous week, yeah, I definitely don't think, he's too concerned about it. I mean, I think Jake Fromm, like most, you know, high-achieving players of his ilk, and Justin Fields probably falls in this category, and you would think he does because he wasn't afraid to come to the University of Georgia to start with. I think, you know, their competition is always with themselves. I mean, they're always looking to get better, always studying hard, working hard, and, you know, to get better. And you know that's the case with Jake Fromm. And the way he played last season, I mean, you know, the main difference between him and Justin Fields is you have a 15-game record to go by, not just win-loss record, but I'm talking about, 100 plays roughly in each one of those games. And the fact that he came through that, performed at the level he did, led Georgia to 13 victories and oh so close to a 14th, tell you that he's going to be a hard guy to beat out. And it's all good for Georgia. I mean, any pressure that Justin Fields puts on Jake Fromm is good. Any improvement that Jake Fromm makes is good. And just having Justin Fields there as not only a backup but possibly as the changeup is going to be good for Georgia football overall.
And you know, to bring up Fields here for a moment, who you just talked about there, the flip side of this discussion is while Fromm is tough to beat out, you know, as you know, you quoted some Georgia players this past week, you know, describing Fields' cannon arm and, you know, things like that. He certainly brings the wow factor, it seems, to Georgia practice. So you've got this guy in Fromm who's very tough to beat out, but Fields, who's going to make a big name for himself because of some of the dazzling things that he's going to do. It's one of the reasons why we're all so fascinated by this story, right? Because I'm going to praise Fromm in one breath, but acknowledge that Fields is probably quite formidable in another breath.
Yeah, absolutely. Justin brings a lot of different things to the table than Jake Fromm does. I don't know that Jake Fromm probably, he's not a quote-unquote dual threat quarterback, but I think we saw enough last season. I mean, how many times did we see him, you know, keep the ball on that zone read and make huge plays at huge times? In fact, I would often watch the games and wonder why he wasn't keeping it more often because the defense was, you know, closing so hard on the running back on that zone replay. But, you know, the fact of the matter is Jake Fromm had great timing and a great knack for knowing just when the right moment was to keep that and surprise the defense. So he can do that. The difference in him and Justin Fields is maybe that Justin Fields can keep that ball anytime he wants to and still be a formidable run threat, which adds to everything that you can do on Georgia's defense. The flip side of that also is Jake Fromm has some unbelievable third down numbers. So the general thought is, well, you know, Georgia could use Justin Fields as maybe a third down back or some kind of changeup. But heck, Jake Fromm's best work was probably done on third down. So, you know, how this, you know, the challenge for Jim Chaney and for new quarterbacks coach, Foley, yeah, it's going to be, you know, how to incorporate both of these, you know, into Georgia's offense, and that's a good little equation to try to figure out.
We started the show today by talking about some of the things that Lane Kiffin had said about Kirby Smart and how he compares to Nick Saban and what might happen in the future at Georgia with Alabama. And you also wrote about that at Dog Nation this week or this past week, that budding rivalry between Alabama and UGA. And, Chip, from my standpoint, it almost seems hard to imagine how this doesn't happen. These two teams don't have a long history with each other. And, you know, in terms of regular season schedule, you know, it doesn't swing around that often. But in terms of postseason dates like the one we saw back in January, my guess is we're going to have a lot more of those. Head-to-head recruiting battles for sure. And by the time Kirby Smart's tenure is done at Georgia, I believe that you will think of Alabama as a UGA rival at that point in time.
Well, Georgia can only hope so. And that was my point on that story, that column that I wrote, is that can Kirby Smart make this into a rivalry? Because really, it's, you know, the onus is on Georgia to make it that, and that would require getting to the SEC championship. Because as we all know, Georgia and Alabama just don't play each other often in the regular season because of the SEC schedule rotation. It takes a long time to get around to playing those West opponents home and home. And you know, certainly Georgia's, if you look at Georgia's record against Alabama overall, you know, it's better than a lot of programs. They've been able to hold their own. I think they got 25, 28 victories, something like that, against Alabama in school history. But they just don't play each other very often. So the hope, yeah, for Georgia and for Kirby Smart is that you get into that game often here over the next several years, which most people are expecting. But, you know, that's up to Georgia to make that happen. And if you do represent the East in that SEC championship, you know, 9 times out of 10, if you look at history, or certainly history under Nick Saban, that opponent's going to be Alabama. And you just want to make that a regular thing. If they could play each other every January, I think we'd all be really proud.
All right, yeah, Chip, that's really interesting. Good stuff. We'll look forward to reading a bunch more from you at DogNation.com. Thanks for your time on Dog Nation Daily, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, really interesting stuff from Chip Towers. Always love having him on Dog Nation Daily, and hope you'll be able to join us later on this afternoon for another episode of SEC Country Live. We'll come up 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the SEC Country Facebook and YouTube pages. We'll look forward to talking to you there. And some of the stories that we'll talk about this afternoon on SEC Country Live. You know, Alabama, there was a report out there, Aaron Suttles, Tuscaloosa News. I guess Jim Dunaway also had some of this as well, that Alabama's kind of looking into some new scheduling stuff. And I found this to be kind of interesting because if this does go down, and these are just negotiations right now, it is taking Alabama in a different scheduling direction than it's gone in the past. According to Aaron Suttles, TideSports.com, Alabama's looking at possible home-and-home with both Texas and Notre Dame. Now, the obvious question here when it comes to the Notre Dame thing is, oh, is this Alabama seeing how well this worked out for Georgia last season, saying, hey, maybe that's pretty good for the old Tide brand as well, that we don't want to let Georgia be the only one that gets to travel across the country and show up in these huge numbers in a opposing stadium. You know, I went back and rewatched that Georgia-Notre Dame game in preparation for Dog Nation Appreciation, and it's funny, you know, Tirico and it was Doug Flutie, who was the color commentator, they spent so much time on the NBC broadcast. This is prime time on NBC, a major over-the-air broadcast network. And so much of that broadcast was devoted to Georgia fans. Like every 20, 30 minutes of the broadcast, they'd once again make reference to how loud it was for Notre Dame in its own stadium and kind of everything else. Georgia was clearly on a big national stage that night, and Georgia fans, I mean, I'm going to say this to the host of Dog Nation Daily, but it seems, you know, virtually, you know, objectively true that you know, the Georgia brand grew by being in South Bend, Indiana. And it's easy to connect the dots on that to say, for Alabama, why couldn't we get some of that? How about we go to South Bend or go to a place like Austin, Texas, which is another one of these big national brands, Texas, big stadium, big city, really. Austin's a popular travel destination. This is Alabama maybe wanting to do that if these negotiations actually lead to signed contracts and these games end up getting played. What's also interesting about this from an Alabama standpoint is that Alabama has been steadfast in its devotion to the neutral side games. It's playing one this year against Louisville. It's playing one next year against Duke. And really, those are lesser opponents. For the most part, what Alabama's played in these kind of games has been Florida State. It's been USC. They're also negotiating another neutral side game with USC. Clemson, Virginia Tech, programs like that. Alabama likes the big non-conference opener, but has chosen to do those in neutral site venues as opposed to home and homes. I do think that what Georgia did last year in South Bend potentially opened up a can of worms. And I said this not too long ago on our show here, that I think a lot of Georgia fans really enjoyed that travel. They enjoyed the experience of going to Chicago and staying in Chicago for a couple days. They enjoyed making the, what, about 90-minute trip over to South Bend on the day of the game. I think Georgia fans are wondering, when do we get to do this again for a big non-conference game? This may become the new in vogue thing. Georgia may be kind of leading the way on that, and Alabama might want to get involved on that too, because obviously Greg Byrne, the athletic director, Nick Saban, the head coach, they don't want the big PR attention to solely go in the direction of a place like Georgia. They want to try to get in on that. I think the scheduling story is going to be one to watch. And it's another reason why on Dog Nation Daily a few days ago I suggested this idea that Georgia has to play Georgia Tech every year going forward. I just don't know that that's something that has to be true anymore. I think the future scheduling model in college football are things that we just described. Texas, Alabama. Notre Dame, Alabama. How do you play more games like that? Well, getting rid of sort of mid-tier FBS opponents might be a good way to sort of see something like that happen on a more regular basis. All right, a couple other stories I want to talk to you about here. Vanderbilt becomes the first SEC team to have its spring game, and, well, the spring game looked almost exactly like you would expect a Vanderbilt spring game to look. Nobody in the stadium. Weather was terrible. I guess if you're Vanderbilt, you don't have the same choices to do things other people do. Maybe by having an earlier start to spring and an earlier spring game, maybe get some more attention for your program, maybe. But it just almost seems like late March is just too early for a spring game. It was cold, weather was bad, nobody was there. Bad commercial for the Vanderbilt program on Saturday. We'll show you some of the video from that on SEC Country Live this afternoon. Also, kind of a juicy report coming out of Florida. Apparently, your boy Emory Jones is struggling just a little bit. The incoming freshman quarterback who, I mean, I've got nothing against Jones. I don't like Florida, but I don't dislike Jones personally. But, you know, a lot of Florida fans view him as the savior. He was the elite quarterback signee for the class of 2018, really Florida's biggest signee. And as of right now, he's working fourth string at quarterback, apparently, and not really challenging Felipe Franks at all. That is certainly something to watch. Also, something else that we'll talk about later on today on SEC Country Live, LSU released some stats for its quarterback scrimmage. Looks like Miles Brennan is in a pretty full command of that quarterback job. We'll kind of give you more details on that and kind of talk about the LSU quarterback situation this afternoon on SEC Country Live. Hope you'll join us for now. We'll make that your SEC through. And as we wrap up, speaking of Florida, yeah, I mean, I do have a kind of a good time thinking about a quarterback competition not exactly going well. I guess the report is that Kyle Trask right now, former walk-on, not even a starter on his high school team, is working as the number two quarterback and really the only quarterback pushing Franks at all, at least according to some reports that I read over the weekend from SEC Country, maybe Trask. That is not good news for Florida, no matter how you slice it up. Speaking of the Gators, you know, 215 days from right now, Georgia plays Florida again in Jacksonville, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. We think Georgia gets another win there. We have a smile on our face thinking about it. It's our Gator Hater Countdown here on Dog Nation Daily. I'll also give you a quick programming note. We will have a Dog Nation Daily double for you later on today at the forum at forum.dognation.com. We'll also put a link for it at the show page at dognation.com. Good weekend for the Diamond Dogs. A few other UGA teams will tell you all about that. And see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.